Welcome to Between the Lines, a monthly magazine show on the third Thursday of every month at 2 p.m. on WGXC at 90.7 FM. I'm your host, Anne Forbes Cooper.
Tell me the truth, to burden your mouth for what you say, and pieces of paper in the way. 'Cause I can't continue pretending to choose these opposite sides on which we fall, and loving you later is if at all.
You are listening to Between the Lines, and my guest is Stanley Maltzman, who's a highly acclaimed landscape artist, as well as an accomplished author and educator. He works in a variety of media, most often pastel, watercolour or charcoal, and he lives in, or rather near, Freehold. His drawings and paintings have been widely exhibited in museums and galleries throughout the country, including the Carnegie Museum of Natural History, the Butler Institute, the National Academy, and the American Academy of Arts and Letters. His work is represented in many collections, including the U.S. Coast Guard Museum, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, which acquired three of his works, as well as a copy of his book, Drawing Nature. In July, he turns 92 years old, which must make him one of the oldest working artists today. Stanley's strong belief that good painting evolves from the ability to draw well leads to frequent invitations to lecture and conduct his plein air seminars and workshops for high school and adult students. He also teaches at the Hudson River Valley Workshops in Greenville, New York, near where he lives. Welcome to Between the Lines, Stanley. I feel honoured to be interviewing you, and I want to congratulate you on your upcoming birthday.
Well, thank you very much. I look forward to it, and I have friends that are looking forward to me going further.
Yes, indeed. Now, let me ask you, how many other artists out there are still drawing or painting over the age of 90? Is there like an over 90 artist club that you belong to?
Not that I know of, but I'd be happy to meet them.
Yeah. Now, tell us exactly what you specialize in. You're kind of known as a plein air painter. Yeah. And you also teach. So just talk a bit about what it is that fascinates you about nature and
plein air, as a saying that's been around for a while. And what it means is that I did most of my work outdoors. And it's wonderful to do that because you smell and you feel and sense the beauty around you. Until I guess you get to hit 92 and you're not too comfortable outdoors anymore. So I go out sketching and I make sketches in watercolor or pastel quick drawings. And I go back to my studio and I enlarge on them. And I find that very comfortable today. So that's the difference between the plein air and I'm now indoors.
So what's a typical day for you? Do you get up and paint or draw every single day?
I try to, but of course, living by myself here, I have to do some vacuum cleaning, you know, so, and the dust, dusting a bit too. But I usually end up in the studio in the afternoon, if not right in the morning, and I do some sketching or work on some notes to work on a big, large picture. I do drawings. I love to draw. I feel drawing is the essence of all good art, and you should keep drawing. And then you find that your painting will improve because you really draw with a brush as well as with a pencil or charcoal. So I don't give up the drawing, but I paint and I do a lot of pastel. I'm a member of the Pastel Society of America, academic artists and Audubon artists. And it's just fun. I enter a lot of shows and you win some and you lose some.
Is it possible to put a a number on how many paintings or drawings you've produced in your lifetime?
No, I don't think so, because in the beginning I never really kept accurate works, you know, how many I did or what. I did them because I love to do them, and I still do it, but now I make a little postcard on everything I do frame. So I have quite a few. You know, you don't sell everything you do, and your studio soon gets crowded, and people like to come in there. They wiggle around because they can't walk straight, and they love to dig in and find things. And I enjoy it, too. I don't mind. I have a lot of wonderful friends I met through my art, and still have many of them. They don't live here anymore. They live out in Arizona and Darien and Colorado, all over. And it's nice to get letters from people that they saw my work here and there and so forth. So don't be discouraged if you don't sell something right away. You know, keep working. It's a lot of fun.
With that bit of advice, one of the things about you is that you still teach, right? You're teaching a class tonight.
Yeah, I love to teach, and I have met a lot of wonderful people with my teaching. And I do workshops. I got a workshop I'm going to do in Old Forge on July 7th for 3-4 days. I'm going to the library in Greenville, and that's free to people. But you have to sign up quick because it fills up mighty fast. As a matter of fact, that's filled class. I'm teaching that starting tonight and goes through till next week, till Wednesday, before I have a little surgery on my eyes so I can see you better.
In fact, you're having cataract surgery. And after that, I can't even imagine what your painting is going to be like, as you will kind of have new eyes.
Well, that's what I hear. You can see a lot of colors better and be able to see everything better, and that's wonderful, because right now it's a little cloudy and it's hard to read and hard to see a little bit. But I hear it's a wonderful thing, and I'm looking forward to it. Right. And the VA takes good care of me.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're also curator of the Greenville Library Gallery, is that correct?
Well, I was for many years, and now there's a new curator there, Sean Stewart, and he's a wonderful guy doing a nice job. But I'm a curator of the Agroforestry Building up on 23, and I arrange exhibits there. And it's a lot of fun, and I feel good about getting artists who normally won't get in a big gallery a chance to exhibit.
Really? Now, what do you mean by artists who won't get in a big gallery? What kind of artists are you looking for?
Well, I'm looking for decent artists, but it's pretty hard to get in a gallery. You got to be a little better than decent. Mm-hmm. And this gives people the feeling of exhibiting. And the Agroforestry Building has a nice gallery there. Marilyn Weinman is in charge, and she helps, and she's a wonderful lady. And we allow people, I recommend them, and I see their work, and it's got to be only nature. And we have wonderful exhibits there.
One of the things I love about you, Stanley, I've only known you a very short time. I just met you a few weeks ago. But one of the things that I noticed right away is that you have this great sense of humor. And I love the voice message on your answering machine, which I want you to just relay it now.
Well, it just came to me. Instead of just saying... Okay, here I am, Stanley Maltzman. Leave a message, talk to you. So I came up with this I'm Michelangelo, and I'm working on the ceiling, and it's taking longer than I thought it would, so I can't talk to you right now, but if you leave the message, I will get back to you. And it seems to work. People get a kick out of it. And that's...
Well, I roared with laughter, so it was more than a kick.
Well, a lot of people enjoy it, and we'll let it go at that. It's a fun thing to do, that's all. Yeah. I like to keep things light if I can.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that must keep you young. I mean, I don't want to ask the old cliched question, but it looks like I'm going to. What's your secret of longevity? What is it that keeps you young?
I don't know. They're only numbers as far as I'm concerned. And I don't worry about it. I just keep doing what I've been doing all these years and not worry about how old I'm getting. And I think that's the main thing is if I'm ill or something, I know I'm going to get over it, or I'm confident that I'm going to get over it. And I don't worry about things. As I say, to me, they're only numbers. And I keep going. And I'm enjoying life, and I'm grateful for what I got, grateful for my family, and I'm having fun.
Yeah, obviously, yes. You know what? We are going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Stanley Maltzman, painter and plein air artist.
Was a famous trumpet man from our Chicago way. He had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was the top man at his class. But then his number came up and he was gone with the draft. He's in the army now, a blowing reveille. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. They didn't know a bugle for his Uncle Sam. They really brought him down because he could not jam. The captain seemed to understand, because the next year the cap went out and drafted the band. And now the company jumps when he plays reveille. He's the boogie boogie bugle boy of Company B. A root, a toot, a tootly attitude. He blows the H of the bar. In boogie rhythm, he can't blow a note. Let the bass and guitar is playing with him. And the company jumps when he plays reveille. He's the boogie boogie bugle boy of Company B. He was some boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. When he plays boogie woogie bugle, he was busy as a busy bee. He made the company jump the H of the bar. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. La da da doodly da da doodly da da doot doot. He goes H of the bar. He can't blow a note for bass and guitar with him. And the company jumps the need for gravelly. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. The boogie every night. Now wake them up the same way in the early rise. They clap their hands and extend their feet, cause they know how to go. The sun will get the beat. Whoa, whoa, and make it up when he plays on the lead. The boogie woogie bugle boy is coming in me.
And we are back with Between the Lines. I'm your host, Anne Forbes Cooper, and I'm here with local artist Stanley Maltzman, who will be a mere 92 years old on July 4th.
Over 90, I had the honor of recently flying to Washington with what they call the Leather Stockings Honor Society, something like that. And what they did was take a group of World War II veterans to the Washington Memorial. And it was a wonderful thing because we met in Hudson. And when we went to the airport, there was the squad car with all the lights blinking. For once, it was in front of me, not behind me. And we got to Kinderhook. 8 motorcycle guys also joined and were taking us and accommodating us. It was beautiful. I kind of get lost because it was such a nice, nice thing. And they escorted us to the airport. When we got to the airport, there was a mob of people, band playing, flags, people shaking hands with us. And it was really a memorable occasion. Then there were also about 50 veterans in wheelchairs. And the nice thing about it, if you looked at them, there was a sparkle in their eyes. And to me, that was a wonderful thing. I don't know how old they were, but they just were guys that did the same thing I did in World War II and didn't think anything of it. When we came home...
Well, first of all, just what exactly is an honor trip?
Well, that's a title that they have. It's a leather stocking honor trip, you know. And it's a group of people that's all over the country, I understand. And it's only for World War II veterans. And when we come back to Albany, it was about 11-something at night. And there we pulled in the airport there, and they had mail call, like we used to have aboard ship, you know. And I got 14 letters from people, school kids and my family. And there was a mob of people there at 11 o'clock at night, shaking our hand. And what stood out in my mind today, very much so, is a little girl, no bigger than come to her mother's hips, came out and put her hand out and shook hands with me. And that was a very memorable thing to me. And it just was wonderful that so many people would be there so late at night to greet us back again. It was a wonderful day, and I'm very grateful to the Leather Stocking Gang.
Well, as you mentioned it, so what exactly did you do in World War II then?
Well, I was joined the Coast Guard after Pearl Harbor, and actually I went right down, but they didn't take me. And I called up and complained, and the next thing I know, I was going. So, no, I didn't mind. It was what I asked for. I got aboard a ship called the Centaurus, and we came out of the Brooklyn Navy Yard, and I was what they call a plank owner. That's somebody who originates with the flag of being first served on board that ship. So, and it was a great kind of ship. We went through 6 invasions, Okinawa being probably the most, although memorable. We shot down 2 kamikazes at Okinawa. We were in Guam and Peleliu and floating reserve for Iwo Jima and stuff like that, and fished a pilot out of the water that was bombing Troy, and he was so happy. And I spent 21 months aboard the ship, and acquired a beautiful sunburn, which is now giving me little cancer things.
Oh.
On the face. No, they I go to the VA and they take care of it, and they caught one that was going to do some harm, and they cut it out, and I'm perfectly happy.
And you're perfectly healthy too, by the looks of you. So, do you want to finish that story?
Well, serving 21 months aboard the Centaurus, I met many wonderful guys, and to this day we have reunions and we meet once a year. And of course each year is a little less guys there, but it's a wonderful thing. And I met people whom I never had met before, even though we were both on the ship, because I was on the flying bridge, which is the uppermost part of the bridge. I was a signalman. And these guys were on deck with the small boats. We had 24 landing barges aboard where we used to take Marines and Army into the beaches. And as I had never thought much about it until I started meeting with these fellas. And we still communicate. And they're all wonderful guys. Went on to one guy, he's a big man in the chicken industry. I know it sounds funny, but...
His name's not Perdue, is it?
No, it's John Huff.
Okay.
I was his best man at his wedding, you know.
Okay.
No, it was. This is just one small example. We still call on the phone each month and talk to each other. And he's taken up painting now, so he gets a big kick out of seeing some of my work and my book and stuff. And I get letters from people all over the country who buy my book. And when I wrote the book...
which is a drawing called Drawing
Nature.
Drawing Nature, yeah. Kathy Kipps, who was the author, I mean, not the author, but the director, editor? Editor is the right word. And when we got done with it, at that time, she said, you know, Stan, I think we did a classic. And today I get word from all over the country, people write me letters that they... enjoy the book, and they've learned so much from it, and I'm beginning to believe her.
They might have a point, you think?
Yeah, I think so. The other book, Drawing Trees, people tell me they see it on Amazon and websites and things that for big money. And that's nice. It's not my money, but somebody's selling the book, and that's nice. And
so somebody's making money on it, even if it's not you.
I don't mind, as long as they're enjoying the book, you know, books. So
let me ask you, as we are talking about the Second World War here, that's when you started painting, correct? Really quite late in life.
Well, no, I started, actually I wanted to be a shop teacher. When I went to school, I won a gold medal for shop, and I loved it. And I had my shop teacher draw out a program for me and everything. When I got in high school, the special shop class was filled, so they put me in special art.
Okay. And I just have to stop you there because I'm so ignorant. What is shop? I'm not from this country, so what is shop?
Well, shop work is where we used to learn how to use tools, and we would make cigar stands. And there's a funny thing is I made an end table, and everything was usually stained and shellacked. It was dark brown. But I went ahead and painted mine apple green. And I got a call from the principal, and I thought, oh, I'm in trouble now. When I got to the principal's office, she asked me if I had made that little end table there green. I said, yes, I did. And she says, well, would you please make me one? So I kind of got convinced. And I love to do shop work, even to this day. And so anyway, when I graduated high school, I got a part-time job. I was going to school in the morning, an art school. The Grand Central School of Art was in the Grand Central building on the sixth floor. And I would work in this carpet. I would be making sample books. I think the man, he was just a wonderful guy. He didn't really need me, but he kept me so I could go to school, which I'm forever grateful to him, wherever he is. And that was the start of it. And then I went in the service, and I had a sketchbook, and I was sketching, the fighting and things like that in the sketchbook. And after the war, I went to school on a GI Bill, and that was the beginning of my art career.
Tell me your background before then. Where are you from, and what did you grow up doing, and what was your job, your proper job?
Well, I grew up in the Bronx, and what was so wonderful about it was that it was a conglomeration of every nationality that you could think of, and it was wonderful. We all got along, and God forbid that you didn't go ask some woman who's carrying packages if you didn't help her. You'd hear about it. My mother, they had a secret communication that was better than the FBI or anybody, these women. And anyway, everybody, was friendly, that people would sit out in the streets all hours talking, and they helped each other. And it was just a wonderful thing. And I remember we didn't have money, but we built ice skating rinks in the lot. We would rake them all up, and our ice skates were curtain rods. We drilled holes to tie them to our feet, and we had fun. We spent days raking the lot to make a clear spot, hours getting water from Joe the Shoemaker, and freezing a little, and have a pond. And we had fun. And then we would build huts, and we would have all kinds of activities. It's like somebody published a paper saying, today it's going to be hockey, kick the can, and so forth and so on. We didn't need anybody directing us. We were in the street playing all day long. And at night, we were lucky. We had a guy who used to tell stories. I forget his name, but we'd be sitting on the running board of a car, and he would tell us stories. And it was just a lot of fun. My friend Tullio, he would fall asleep, and we'd leave him there. And it was just great. All this mix of guys got along together. We played baseball. We played stickball. We played hockey. We just did everything. And it was a lot of fun. We built igloos in the snow. And we were really the best of friends. And then the war came along. Mm. And we had Bund people in the area, too. And
you had what?
The German people had a Bund camp in Jersey, and quite a few of them lived in our block. And when the war came on, they were wearing their brown shirts and bicycles and riding up and down the street. Not for long. Our mother's broom handles disappeared. And so did the bikes. Anyway, and then when after the war, I lost contact with everybody and got married, and you had to go to work, and whatever happened, the whole area changed. My father had a ladies' tailor shop there, and people came from all over to my pop's store, and my mother would sit and embroider initials inside the clothes. After the war, well, the area changed, and somebody offered my father a store, free store, free rent, and a house if he would move to New Rochelle so she wouldn't have to come to the Bronx. But he wouldn't do that because after my mother left the store to go upstairs in the house to make dinner for him, all his cronies, the Irish guy, the Jewish guy, the Italian guy, the green guy, orange guy, whatever, they all came into the store, and all the world affairs were settled, and that, to my father, was worth more than money, and it was a wonderful thing. And he was a great guy, taught me a lot.
Now, you were in scouting, I read, as a kid, and that was when you first got your appreciation of nature.
Yeah, I joined the Boy Scouts, and we had a lot of fun. We used to march in the parade and the Grand Concourse, and we used to get 50 cents for carrying the flag for the Ladies Auxiliary. And one thing that stuck in my mind with those parades was the Civil War guys. I would see them, they were driving by in a car, and they were waving to us and all that. And by golly, here I am, 92. I'm thinking I'll be riding by in a car soon. But who knows what'll be. And scouting, we would go up to hike, overnight hikes. And I also would work in a Boy Scout camp, Camp Ranacore. I worked there 6 years. I started out as a librarian, doctor's orderly, then assistant maintenance, and then assistant scoutmaster, and then scoutmaster, where I had 82, I forget how many kids that I would have in my scout troop, and you would get paid for that. That was the first time. And all that time I was enjoying nature. It was a wonderful thing. And my dream was to live in the country at one time. And I first got married, I lived on 153rd Street, then it was 167th Street, then it was Yonkers, and then it was up here in the country. And I
so when did you move up here?
In 1974, I quit work as in the commercial art field and came up here, and I was painting signs to make a dollar.
And up here what was your job in the commercial art world?
Well, I was an account executive. I started out, I was working just in a bullpen, and then I got a job as a leader in the bullpen. You know, I was the shop steward, kind of.
At what industry? I mean, what company?
Well, I worked for Lever Brothers. I worked for Vic Chemical Company. Mm-hmm. And I did work for Union Carbide, for Best Foods, all different companies, you know, in the commercial art field. And I did package design, and I really loved it. And then I got a job as a account executive for Norelco. And it was then that I decided this guy would call me up 4:45 every night and want the job next morning. And I got tired of that, and I came home and said to Ray, I says, if I hit this guy, I'm going to go to jail, of course. It's assault. I'm not a kid. I said, so I would quit, and then we're moving up the country. And she stood there with her mouth open. But I think it did Ray a lot of good for her lungs. And I loved it up here. And she got a job in a hotel as in a gift shop. And it was wonderful.
Right. Now, Ray, of course, is your wife of how many years? How many years were you married? She's now sadly passed away. But
yeah, Rachel's gone about 8 years. We were married as kids, 58 years we were married. And it was wonderful. No, we had a great marriage, had great kids, and great grandkids, and life goes on.
And we are going to take a short break, and we will be right back talking to Stanley Maltzman.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, you just joined us. My name is Anne Forbes Cooper. I'm the host of Between the Lines, and I'm here talking to Stanley Maltzman. Now, I have to ask you, when you moved up here, what about the Hudson River School of Painting? Were you influenced at all by that? Are you influenced by it?
Well, yes and no. I mean, everybody seems to want to copy their style and stuff, and I feel that you're an individual and you have your own style. What they did was wonderful, and it is inspirational, but I paint my own way, and it's different from the Hudson River School. But they were a group of wonderful painters, and there's no getting away from that. And Thomas Cole, Frederick Church was his student. All kinds of wonderful people come out of this school. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of people are doing it, but they're copying the same style as was done by the Hudson River painters. And I don't see any sense to that. Do your own work, and your own style evolves, and that's a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm. So who has influenced you? Who do you admire? Have you been influenced by different people throughout the course of your career in art?
Well, yeah, when I was down in the city, I was in a wonderful gallery, a couple of wonderful galleries. I was in the Frank Rain Gallery. Mr. Clancy was the director, and he had Bellows and Birchfield and Marsh, Sloan. You couldn't ask for any bigger names, and he gave me a one-man show there. And then you have Gertrude Dennis of the Wehe Gallery, and she was a wonderful lady who knew a lot about art. And then there was Associated American Artists, Sylvan Cole, print gallery, and I sold a lot of my lithographs there. And these three people I learned a lot from. And they were wonderful people, and I'm sorry that they're gone, and I haven't found a place to exhibit like them ever again, but I'm not sorry, and I don't give up. I've got other things coming up.
You certainly have, and we're going to talk about some of those in a minute. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Between the Lines. I'm your host, Anne Forbes Cooper, and I'm here with plein air artist Stanley Maltzman of the Hudson Valley.
Thank you.
Stanley, you're not only an artist in your own right, but you also kind of have a father-daughter act. No, it's not an act, a father-daughter relationship. I mean, your daughter paints too, is what I'm trying to say. And her name is Susan Story, is that correct?
That's correct. And she's a pretty darn good artist too. And she's working like a son of a gun. She's enjoying it. But it's a tough, as I say, it's a very glamorous profession, but a tough buck. And my daughter Susan's very good too. She gets better. She works hard. We go out painting together. And
you now, what kind of art does Susan do? I haven't seen her stuff, but you guys had an exhibit not that long ago, didn't you, at Wyndham?
Yeah. Well, Susan's going to have another exhibit at the Agroforestry Building in September, I believe it is, August, September, or something like that. And she does beautiful pastels, nature. And I have to say, and she works hard, and she's getting better. It's no magic. It's work. Mm-hmm. That's the talent. You know, people say, oh, my God, you're born with such talent. No, you have a desire, and you're putting the time in, and you're getting working on a dream, and it comes only from the work. And Susan works, and her work is showing so much improvement through the years. And I'm proud of her. That's all I can tell you about her. She's creeping up. She's going to be past me, you know. So it's wonderful.
So let me ask you, do you feel that at this point you're still learning? Do you
absolutely.
Who inspires you today?
Well, being in those galleries there, I was inspired by Charles Birchfield and Wyeth. And I wrote Birchfield a letter because I had purchased a drawing, and they were saying that it was pen and ink, and I said, no, it was charcoal. And I asked Mr. Clancy if he would mind if he would give me the address, and I could write to Charles Birchfield and ask him, and he said, sure. And I did write to him, and I got such a nice letter back, flattering, saying he was flattered that a fellow artist would want to buy his work, and you know Birchfield's stuff is terrific. And anyway, I was right, and I kept that letter, and it's hanging on the back of this wonderful little picture I bought. And that was quite a while ago, but it inspired me. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy going to show Winslow Homer, you know, all these people that just painted and painted and painted. Mm-hmm. And it's, like I say, it's not magic, it's hard work. Mm-hmm. And it shows with the work that you do. Mm-hmm. And I feel my work's improving, I'm getting better, and I'm enjoying it very much, just as much as when I first started.
What are you working on at the moment?
Well, I'm working on a project for this young lady, a 1700 farm. She wanted a sketch, and I got so involved, I did five sketches. And she loved them so much, she bought three of them. And I'm going to do a large 20 by 30 for her. And then I have another commission to do of the ice industry in the Hudson. This gentleman, his grandfather used to work at that, and so he wants a painting of that. And then I got something else coming up for next year, which I promised to keep you involved and tell you about it, but I don't want to tell you about it now.
Uh-huh.
Yes, it's going to be a secret for a while, but I promise you, before the 1st of May of next year, I'll tell you all about it.
Okay, I'll hold you to that, Stanley.
Okay, and if you like the idea, you can run with it, and if you don't, I won't feel bad about it.
Oh, my goodness, it sounds very intriguing. What on earth is it? What can it be?
No secrets. I mean, I was going to say.
Now, do you have any exhibits? Are you anything coming up that you're going to be exhibiting?
I have one in October in the Rensselaerville Institute, in November, December at the Agroforestry Building. And that's what I have now. But I have some exhibits. I have work hanging in Old Forge at The View. It's called The View. It's like a beautiful museum there. And I have something in the Audubon Artists And I have something coming up in the Hudson Valley Art Association and Academic Artists. Those three shows, exhibits I have in, right now, I have something, one piece in there. It's their juried shows, and you get in or you're juried out, you know. So it's a lot of fun.
And if people want to see your work online, you have a website?
Yes, my daughter Carol had made a website for me. It's called www.gallerydir.com. Stanley Maltzman. But go look for Stanley Maltzman. You'll find enough stuff there to keep you busy.
Okay, I'm sure that's true. I don't want to keep harping on the age thing, but I want to ask you one other question about it. So you give me great hope for the future in many ways. Are there any advantages to growing old? You always hear about the disadvantages, but what do you enjoy about getting older?
Well, I get a kick out of teasing people. If I don't remember something, I say, you know, it's my age. I can't help it. But that's baloney. You know, I just forget. No, I can't really. I'm enjoying myself. And as I say, to me, it's only numbers. And I don't worry about getting old. I have no control over it. Yeah. And I'm enjoying myself. I'm enjoying life. My work's getting better, my family is very nice to me, and Joyce is very nice. I enjoy her.
And so, if you mention Joyce, we have to just say who she is.
Joyce, a nurse at the VA, and she's guaranteed to keep me going another 10 years.
Talk to Joyce.
Okay. She can straighten you out about this.
In fact, you're stepping out with Joyce, are you not?
Yes, I am. We have a nice kind of relationship, and she likes art. And if we're driving long distances, which I'm not too keen on anymore, Joyce drives and we get there. So it's been fun, and I'm looking forward to more fun.
What has age taught you?
That's a funny question. I guess it's kind of taught me to mind my own business, you know. And I love to help people, and I don't mind going out of my way to help people. But you have to just show me a little respect. Otherwise, I have nothing to do with you ever again.
Now, that's interesting.
I learned that working in the chemical company. There was a wonderful head art director there, Jack Skolnick. And there was this guy working in the studio. I was studio manager. And he was stealing stuff every day, taking home a portfolio full of art supplies. And I told him to stop, and he wouldn't stop. So I went and spoke to Mr. Skolnick, and I said, told him what was happening, and he said, Stan, life's too short. People give you trouble, get rid of them. So I had to fire this guy. And he said, if you can't do it, I'll do it. But he's telling me that's my job. I got to do it. So that ever since then, I respect people. I enjoy people. But pardon my French, don't screw me.
Okay, I'll bear that in mind. Are you still ambitious?
Yes, certainly. I hope to win more awards at shows. I hope to receive more recognition for my art. And that's, I think, enjoyment that I get out of life today, and besides my family and friends.
What's your biggest challenge as a working artist in your 90s?
Well, to get in some of these shows, you enter and you think you got a nice picture, and you go and you get rejected. But yet when you go see the show, your picture certainly, in your mind, stands out better than a lot of them that are in the show. But you have nothing to do about it. They have judges, and judges like certain things, and that's the way it goes. But I keep trying, and I really enjoy painting and working and putting time in my studio and talking to my kids and so forth.
Right, okay. Is there anything else that you'd like to add that I haven't asked you about?
Well, the only thing I can say to people, I tell the same thing to my students, is you have a dream and you have a desire and go for it. That's all I can, that's the story and that's what I go by.
Any advice for young artists today?
Yes, don't be discouraged. It takes a lot of work, and you're not born with any great talents. You're born with a desire, and that's the talent. And you just work that way, and you'll come out on top. So don't be discouraged. Keep going. That's it.
Okay, words to live by. Stanley Maltzman, I just want to thank you so very much for being on Between the Lines. It's been a great joy having you on the show.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed chatting with you. Thank you very much.
And the music you were listening to was Bette Midler's Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy, Django Reinhardt and Stefan Grappelli's Minor Swing, Glenn Miller and his orchestra, String of Pearls. And to take us out, here's John Coltrane in a sentimental mood. And you have been listening to Between the Lines on WGXC at 90.7 FM. I'm your host, Anne Forbes Cooper, and thanks so much for listening, as always.